Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, October 15th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Among our top stories this evening,
the quiet achievements of rural women are celebrated on their International Day of Recognition, with activists calling for more to be done to empower them.
One of the major challenges that we see facing rural women, most rural women do not have information. And what we are doing as the Women's Trust, particularly on Rural Women's Day, is supporting the women to attend these commemorations.
The First Lady Grace Mugabe today continued with her Meet the People tour. She was in Bulawayo, where she castigated ZANU-PF leadership in Matabeleland for jostling for the vice president's post, saying they risked dividing the party.
The main highlight majorly was about the harassment of women, especially the women vendors, that are being harassed by city council, police, and even the authorities themselves.
And the Chitungwiza Town Council fires four union leaders it accused of leading workers in a five-day strike that almost crippled the satellite town.
Zimbabwe joined the international community today in celebrating the quiet achievements of the world's rural women. Rural women are key agents for achieving the transformational economic, environmental, and social changes required for sustainable development, but are hardly celebrated. Limited access to credit, healthcare, and education are among the many challenges they face, which are further aggravated by the global food and economic crisis and climate change. Today, celebrations centered on how to empower them, with activists saying this is the key not only to the well-being of individuals, families, and rural communities, but also to the overall economic productivity, given women's large presence in the agricultural workforce worldwide. In his message marking the day, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said collectively, rural women are a force that can drive global progress. In Zimbabwe, one of the organizations working with rural women, the Women's Trust, says despite strides being made in promoting the rights of women in rural areas, more still needs to be done. Women's Trust Director Memory Zonde Kachambwa spoke with Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye earlier on.
One of the major challenges that we see facing rural women, most rural women do not have information. And what we are doing as the Women's Trust, particularly on Rural Women's Day, is supporting the women to attend these commemorations and to also give them information regarding issues around food security and around issues for improving their livelihoods. Because one of the things that we see is that for women to participate in leadership, they need to be economically empowered. They need to be secure in terms of their livelihoods. So as the Women's Trust, we support them to get information which they can then use to improve their livelihoods. And we'll be focusing particularly at women in the rural areas, but also young women. We also find that in the work that we do, the young rural woman is usually invisible. I'll give you a quick example. If it's your mom-in-law, she'll go to the commemoration and then she'll leave the daughter-in-law cooking. So one of the things that we do is we always want to encourage women to bring their daughters-in-law, to bring the young women, so we have young women who mobilize young women in rural areas, so that they can actually be part of some of these commemorations, to partake some of this information, so that they can actually use it to improve their livelihoods and ultimately to improve food security.
How are some of the women that you're working with going to be commemorating the Rural Women's Day today?
We are working in 15 districts across 8 provinces. We are in all provinces except Manicaland and Mashonaland. What the women that we're working with, we have groups, what we call gender watch groups, and these are groups of 10 women who work in 5 wards in each of the 15 districts. So all in all, we have about 750 women that we work with. So what they do is, most of them have what we call community gardens. So in commemorating Rural Women's Day, they usually do field days where they actually meet with other stakeholders.
That was Director Memory Zwende Kachambwa of the Women's Trust speaking there with Studio 7's Mafela Sintlanganyahuye from Harare.
Meanwhile, in Harare today, Plan International Zimbabwe and the Minister of Women's Affairs held commemorations to mark the International Day of the Girl Child. The ministry's Girls Empowerment Framework was also launched at the occasion. The framework outlines the government's agenda on enacting and tightening laws and policies that protect the girl child and advance her in terms of education, reproductive rights, safety and protection, and economic empowerment. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Plan International Zimbabwe gender advisor Tinotenda Hondo, who hails what she says is a landmark launch of an important framework that will improve the lives of all girls in the country.
As Plan International, we really feel this is a landmark, not only in terms of government committing itself to do something for girls, but also in really giving concrete actions that they're going to take, which are actually time-bound, and we can review and come back to ask, so what has been done, and where are we now in a couple of years?
We understand a few government officials spoke today. What were some of the things that they pinpointed when it comes to the issue of the girl child, and also what government is seeking to do to deal with this problem?
The Minister of Women's Affairs spoke at length in terms of giving detail and explaining what the framework is about and acknowledging that really there is a tendency sometimes to focus on women and not so much on girls. So they really dedicated the day today to girls themselves. And this shortened the program itself, I think, because this was one of those programs that were very child-led. We didn't just have a child MC. The majority of the speakers were children themselves articulating what their issues are and what it is that they would like to see done.
A Plan International itself launched a video which is called It's a Girl's Thing. Can you talk more about that and how important that has been as you showcase the girl child?
You know, since 2007, annually we do a research on a different topic in relation to girls' issues. And this year we were really looking at girls' empowerment and what it is that's being done or is not being done, what works in terms of empowering girls. So with It's a Girl Thing, we're trying to bring across the point that girls have potential in them. They have skill sets with them that really equip them for leadership if only we would let them. So we are trying to promote this idea that we need to empower girls, to give them the space to showcase their talent and to grow into it.
That was Plan International Zimbabwe gender advisor Tinotenda Hondo in Harare.
Meanwhile, the VOA today spoke with Kailash Satyarthi of India, who last week received a Nobel Prize with a teenager, Malala Yousaf, who was shot in the head by the Taliban in 2012 for advocating for girls' rights to education. Satyarthi of India risked his life to fight for children's rights.
I never thought of any award in my life, and sometimes people say that you did not get any award in India and why so, because I have never thought of it and I never worked for it. But one thing is very clear, that I have been awarded thousands of times, and that award is the most divine. That is something which is never going to vanish, and whenever I free a child who has been trafficked and enslaved, whose parents have lost all the hope that child will ever come back, but each time when I take this child back to his mother's lap, and the tears which come out of the eyes of that mother, the tears of joy and freedom, the first smile of liberty comes on the face of that boy or girl, I think that this is my small contribution to bring victory of liberty against slavery. And each time when I see that child's face, I see that it is something like divine, and this is the face of my God.
Mr. Satyarthi, who is 60 years old, has been at the forefront of a global movement to end child slavery and exploitative child labor since 1980, when he gave up his career as an electrical engineer.
I have been saying that child labor and lack of education are two sides of the same coin, especially in case of girls. So we have to ensure education for all children, but we have to save them from human trafficking, slavery, bonded labor, child labor, etc., and also from all sort of insurgencies and violence and terror. So we have to work together in our own ways, but also in our countries and globally.
The Nobel Committee's announcement reflected a delicate diplomatic balance, naming one activist from Pakistan and another from India, two countries that are longtime rivals, one Muslim and one Hindu, both sexes, an elder statesman of child's rights, and a youthful advocate who has herself been a victim.
I'm very proud and happy because I know that nobody can steal my cause. I have been determined for the last 33 years, and I'm convinced that everything which comes as an accomplishment or even sometimes as a criticism, I feel that I'm getting strengthened and I'm moving towards achieving my goal to eradicate child slavery, child labor from the face of humankind.
That was Kailash Satyarthi of India, who risks his life saving the lives of children.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today castigated ZANU-PF leadership in Matabeleland for jostling for the vice presidency post, saying they risked dividing the party. Speaking at AmaZulu Sports Stadium in Bulawayo during her last cross-country Meet the People tour, the First Lady said former ZAPU members should emulate their late party leader Dr. Joshua Mkabuko Nkomo, who was passionate about unity and left the unity accord intact with clear guidelines on who should be vice president among them. She added that the ZANU-PF leadership in Bulawayo should instead concentrate on defeating the MDCT in the city and articulate problems faced by people so that they will not continue voting for MDCT in protest. ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma, who was in today's rally, tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga the First Lady was received with a jubilation in the city.
People were very excited, actually, to meet the First Lady and also in her capacity as the leader of the women. So she was really there to probably meet the Women's League for the first time in Bulawayo province here. So like in all other provinces, we had an overwhelming reception.
But we understand the meeting did not end well, with some people walking out while she was still talking and that she reacted angrily to this. What exactly transpired?
No. The people did not leave because she was talking or anything. She had brought in some goodies, groceries for old women and the disabled. So unfortunately, one of the organizers made a boom by calling up those women to come up to the back of the stage so that when she finishes talking, they could then come up front and receive their hampers that were brought for them. So it was just a matter of one of the organizers who did a mistiming. There was nothing about maybe anybody walking away from her speech or anything.
What would you say were the main highlights of her speech, which resonated well with the audience?
Their main highlights majorly was about the harassment of women, especially the women vendors that are being harassed by city council police and even the ZOT themselves. Look, this is a known secret that these all women and even the young guys and girls that are trying to survive. So as a mother, I thought that was very well said by her. Those laws were bylaws that were put by the colonial era because the white people did not want anybody to be seen selling anything there, because all those things they were producing themselves and they were putting in certain supermarkets, and they wanted everyone to go and buy from those supermarkets, supporting their system. So now that we've outgrown that colonial era and we're in a new Zimbabwe, really, they should be free, to really do that. And, well, of course, there must be bylaws, but those bylaws should be made to accommodate our current situation right now.
That was ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma on the line from Bulawayo with Studio 7 Standekile Mhlanga.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
The Zimbabwe National Students Union is described as outrageous Parliament of Zimbabwe's rejection of their request to probe how First Lady Grace Mugabe was recently awarded a doctorate by the University of Zimbabwe. ZINASU President Gilbert Mtubuki, whose union claims that there are no records of Mrs. Mugabe's enrollment at the UZ, says it is regrettable that Parliament turned down their request. ZINASU wrote a letter to Parliament 2 weeks ago seeking Parliament to, quote, probe the dubious circumstances, close quote, the doctorate was awarded. Mtubuki tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube they have now sent a similar letter to UZ authorities.
We're saying, do we have any regulation or a rule or Act of Parliament, which allows such development. If then we don't have such parliamentary acts, it is the duty of the parliament to monitor and represent the people in monitoring the constitutional procedures.
Now, what was the response of Parliament of Zimbabwe?
Unfortunately, the Speaker of Parliament, His Excellency Mbenda, wrote us a letter saying that they do not have that power, they do not have that authority to probe into the PhD of Grace Mugabe. And they advise us that we should write a letter to the University of Zimbabwe directly and seek that clarification, and also copy the letter to the Senate and the Council of University of Zimbabwe. So we wrote that letter.
That was ZINASU President Gilbert Mtubuki speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mdenda says Parliament cannot handle this case.
We got the letter. It wasn't a petition in the strict sense. And we have replied accordingly.
And so, at the end of the day, how did you actually reply them?
Tell them to send you our reply. They are the ones who told you we replied, isn't it? Tell them to send you the full response, and then it will be up to your judgment whether you agree with us or not as Parliament.
That was the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mdenda, speaking with Gibbs Dube. Lecturer Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University says the Parliament should have probed Mrs. Mugabe's doctorate.
It seems to me as though the Zimbabwe National Students Union must not accept this answer and must seek to get further redress from a different individual, from the Speaker of Parliament rather than the Minister or some person who is an interested party. It seems to me that the reply has come from an interested party who himself needs to be investigated, hence this kind of reply.
What is the significance of this kind of reaction by Parliament?
It seems to me as though Parliament itself has not been approached here by the person who read the letter. They read the letter and decided that it was within their power to respond. I think they are right. The person who responded to this letter has no power to respond because he could easily be implicated. He's responsible for that ministry. This letter must go to a full committee of the Ministry of Higher Education and Technology. And that that committee could then take it further to full parliament.
That was lecturer Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from London.
The central bank says plans to set up an agency to tackle non-performing loans are in the works to bring stability to the financial sector. Deputy Central Bank Chief Kupikile Mlambo told Bloomberg News Agency in Harare today that the RBZ had also seconded a few people to work on the issue and to secure offices. The agency, called Zimbabwe Asset Management Corp., was established in August to deal with about $700 million of bad debts. The major affected banks are Metbank, Allied Bank Limited, Afresia Zimbabwe, and Tetrad. Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute says the agency is a good move, but the government is cash-strapped and might fail to deliver.
I think on paper, it's a positive move. But however, number one, it's not really addressing the root causes of the high percentage of non-performing loans. And also, number two, it's not yet very clear how this new institution that's being created will be funded. So I think those are the two gray areas that have not been adequately addressed. Yes, granted, the non-performing loans are very high and they are quite toxic, not just to the financial system, but also to the overall economy. But we need to get to the real root cause of these high non-performing loans, then probably try to address those root causes.
But why is it that most of these indigenous banks have these high non-performing loans?
I think it's to do with the lending strategies that is lax. When you actually analyze the anatomy of these non-performing loans, you realize that most of them are what we call insider loans, which means these are loans that are given to related parties for example, board members of those institutions, even management, or even the relatives of board members and management. This could also be loans that are given out to, say, even politicians. And normally what happens is that when I borrow money in a related party transaction, so to speak, it minimizes the incentive of me repaying that loan. So I think that's a major problem with these non-performing loans.
That was Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
What do we have in regional and international news?
People in Mozambique, Sandy, are voting today in an election that is expected to keep the country's ruling party in power. Former Defence Minister Philip Nyusi heads the ticket for the Frelimo Party, seeking to replace President Armando Guebuza, who is constitutionally barred from serving a third term. Nyusi faces challenges from Afonso Dlagama from the opposition Renamo Party, which has accused Frelimo of monopolizing political and economic power, and Davis Simango of the newly formed Mozambique Democracy Movement. Renamo signed a peace deal with the government last month to end 2 years of periodic clashes. The former rebel movement had threatened to pull out of the 1992 agreement that ended Mozambique's civil war. The Southern African country is one of the continent's fastest-growing economies, spurred on by recent discoveries of coal and natural gas. In addition to choosing a president, voters will also select a new parliament and provincial assemblies. Frelimo has ruled Mozambique since the country won independence from Portugal in 1975.
The mayor of Dallas, Texas, in the United States, says the situation may get worse before it gets better after a second health worker tested positive for the Ebola virus. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings told reporters today that Dallas authorities are at work notifying neighbors of the second infected healthcare worker who was put into quarantine yesterday after a fever was detected.
And the parents of River Steenkamp say they were quite surprised that confidential payments from South African runner Oscar Pistorius were disclosed during his sentencing hearing. A statement released by their lawyer today said Pistorius had requested the $550 monthly payments not be revealed. The athlete offered the payments last year after hearing the Steenkamp's parents were having financial difficulties.
The Chitungiza Town Council is said to have fired four union leaders who were on suspension after leading workers in a five-day strike that almost crippled the satellite town a few months ago. Workers' union leader Ephraim Katsina, who has been fired, says the council reached the decision last week but is yet to communicate to all affected members. In August, the Chitungiza Town Council suspended over 100 workers for taking part in what it called an illegal strike over unpaid 14 months' wages. Studio 7 reached Chitungiza Mayor Mr. Philip Mtoti for comment, but he preferred to speak tomorrow. But Katsina tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the council's decision is illegal since it did not follow laid down labor procedures in firing them.
It was on the 6th of October when the Board of Inquiry decided to fire me together with Temson Bamusi, the secretary, and Israel Bako, the vice secretary, and Peter Kapamba, a committee member, who were fired on the 6th of October. And the other two guys, Temson Bamusi and Israel Bako, were suspended on the 9th of October in absentia.
Has this been communicated to you by the council?
No, at this juncture, there is no communication, but the procedure is like it goes to the General Purpose Committee, which deals with the welfare of workers. Then from there, it goes to the main council to ratify the decision of the board.
Are you going to challenge this decision?
Of course. course, they are going to challenge it because there were a number of issues that were not done according to the code of conduct. For example, we thought that Priscilla Wengesai, the chamber secretary, was not qualified to be part of the board because she was involved from the beginning. And there are newspaper cuttings and some videos from the radio when she was saying that she would not rest until Katsina is fired.
How many people remain suspended?
As for now, I can confirm that there are about 43 other union members, including subcommittee members, who are yet to get into the board.
And that was fired Chitungwiza. Workers' Union leader Ephraim Katsina. He spoke with Jonga Kandemiri from Chitungwiza.
Zimbabweans living in South Africa who are eligible to apply for the Zimbabwe Special Dispensation Permits continue to meet huge challenges with the online application system being provided by VFS Global on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs. To address the problem, the Home Affairs Department today launched the Zimbabwe Special Permits Application Centers as part of preparations to process all prospective applications under the project. The department's processing partner, VFS, has secured centers in Gauteng, Western Cape, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal in Durban. The remaining six centers in George, Port Elizabeth, Kimberley, Bloemfontein, Nelspruit, and Rustenburg will be operating from the local visa and permit centers. Applicants will be required to visit the centers once they have processed their applications online for biometrics and interviews. Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu spoke with Daniel Muzenda, the communications director of the Zimbabwe Migrants Association, who outlines the continued challenges facing applicants.
We are very hopeful that by next month in November, most people will be starting to go to the centers to have an adjudication, and then later on, maybe their results will be sent to Home Affairs, and possibly in December, most people will be able to get their ZSP permit.
What problems have you been experiencing?
When the process started last week, most people were failing to log into the internet, but most organizations have tried by all means to help those people who were not computer literate to try and help them to log into the internet, and most people have now managed to do so. And the other problem was the lack of information. Most people did not have information on where to go to make the applications. Most people were going to the Ministry of Home Affairs and in other provinces to the Home Affairs ministry offices, yet they were supposed to just do it online and then being given an appointment by VFS. So we hope that by next month, most people will have their appointments date set.
And that was Daniel Muzenda, Communications Director of the Zimbabwe Migrants Association, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa.
And Chris, briefly, in our mailbag, what do we have?
We have the first one, Cindy, is from Joseph Samere, who says, thank you very much, people of our station, with a very good job which you are doing to view and read our thoughts. I wish they could hear our words. Keep on contacting us. We have many views to say, even to our own country, Zimbabwe, we can build it together.
And before we go to do our recap, please, I'll read the two very short ones. You are doing a great work, Jonga, and your friends. I want to say hi to my wife, Maisha Low, and all my children. And keep up the standard. Mambure Enyunga Akure. They want us to cast the net wider. Good evening. That's from another listener. And so, Chris, today we recap today's top stories.
The quiet achievements of rural women are celebrated on their International Day of Recognition with activists calling for more to be done to empower them.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today continued with her Meet the People tour. She was in Bulawayo, where she castigated ZANU-PF leadership in Matabeleland for jostling for the vice president's post, saying they risked dividing the party.
And the Chitungwiza Town Council fires four union leaders it accused of leading workers in a 5-day strike.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamile Nkomo and Sithandekile Mhlanga. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.